Hello and welcome to the Quick Take Hot Take Total Soccer Show from Mercedes-Benz Stadium for MLS Cup. My name is Daryl Grove and I'm joined by a man who is sitting overlooking the field. His name is Taylor Rockwell. Hello.
Hello, my friend. I am indeed a heavily confettied field, I would say. They definitely paid some confetti bills for the celebration.
I also, I feel like, so we obviously we had media credentials, we were in the press room. Mm-hmm. I think we snuck into the game clock room. To get some privacy.
I don't know if it was the game clock
we
or
could
the
change
broadcast
the score. If there are any Portland fans who want the score changed, I think we're a couple button presses away to making that happen.
I mean, that would be a good way to never be invited or approved for any sort of event ever again. But yeah, why not? Could be worth it.
Let's not do that. Okay, let's not do that. Let's instead talk about the game. Let's talk about MLS Cup, the best attended MLS Cup ever.
And actually, can we start there? Because yeah, that's the thing that I know there's going to be a lot of stuff written about the Atlanta fans and the crowd, but even from behind the press box here at Mercedes-Benz is behind glass, so you can't really hear that much, but you could still get a very good sense of the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Lots of fireworks, lots of cheering, yeah, lots of great choreographed celebrations.
So either the glass isn't that good, isn't that soundproof, or the fans were very loud.
I'm going to guess the fans were very loud. Based on how much I know this stadium cost, I'm going to guess it was just that they were that loud. But it's been the whole day. We played soccer this morning at
5 points.
Yeah. And then like walking back, there were people just being like, good luck today. Like, I think they thought we were Atlanta fans. Yeah. Or maybe they thought we were Atlanta United players.
Yeah.
I doubt with our physique, no offense to either one of us, that maybe we came across as pro athletes. But either way, it just felt like the whole city was up for it in a way that I guess I kind of didn't expect, to be honest.
Yeah, wasn't it? So George Krejci from The Athletic, we were hanging around with George, and he said this is the most an MLS Cup has ever felt like a Super Bowl to him. And he's been to a few MLS Cups.
Yeah, I think that's...
Which is a really telling thing to me.
100%. Yeah. And it should have stood out from the All-Star game when every Lyft driver we took, every like person we talked to, every vendor or whatever, talked about Atlanta United and how excited it was and how they've been getting good crowds. And so it shouldn't have come as a surprise, but it still kind of was.
Does, right?
Just to see, you walk in the hotel and it's probably a little bit marketing, but you walk in the hotel and all of the people behind the desk or front desk had like the scarves on and were into it. And it was lobbies full of fans, both Timbers and Atlanta. And certainly the Timbers fans being there created a great atmosphere and it was fun to run into them throughout the day.
All right, enough gushing about the occasion. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the game.
Sure.
All right, so we expected Atlanta to have the upper hand. I remember in the preview, I thought that maybe Atlanta would be very wary of getting counterattacked on early and maybe would hold Escobar and Garza, right back and left back, would hold them back a little bit, maybe not send them too far forward. And oh boy, was I wrong.
Well, I mean, you were right in the sense that I think that was a thing they were worried about. Yeah. We were just wrong in that they were super prepared for that threat.
Yeah.
I mean, and we talked to Jeff Lorenowitz in the locker room after the game. He was kind enough to give us like very specific answers because I was a little worried that we were just going to get some like, oh, you know, it's a great game, played a good game, worked hard in the game, and the game was good. Yeah, exactly. And you know, he broke it down for us about like what their plan was basically based around the threat of the counterattack from Portland. And so they wanted to set up in a way that limited that those opportunities, but sort of at the same time, it feels like forced Portland into trying to play those long balls to launch counterattacks.
I'm trying to remember exactly what Lorenzovic said. I think he said that because there are three of us, three center backs, that it was basically they were able to step and challenge aggressively because they knew they had cover from the other two guys. And also, if you think that they're up against Obobese and maybe Valeri behind him and maybe Blanco coming in for the side, but also Remedy, defensive midfielder, is tracking Diego Valeri the whole time. So that takes one extra player out of the occasion. So it means the three centre-backs, one of them was always free to cover the other one if someone stepped to challenge to any attempted, like, let's play to Obobese and he'll flick it on. Mm-hmm. No, someone was there to cut it out and someone was behind ready for just in case he did get the flick on or anything.
I mean, he
like
went
that
for the flick on. It just never went to a Portland player because he was the furthest forward and really didn't have much support around him. And I think, again,
do you feel for him? I felt bad for him.
Oh, I do. And especially because I think he plays that part in the first goal that Atlanta scored. We'll talk about that in a sec. But first, I wanted to say, like, because we talked to Michael Parkhurst as well. And his point, again, was Remedy cutting
off
Diego
Valeri. Press conference. Sorry.
Remedy cutting off Valeri was key. Mm-hmm. And then it seems like the secondary point was they anticipated Blanco then trying to get more involved centrally as long as Valeri was kind of starved for the ball, starved for possession. And that was where I think Lorenowitz specifically, and then I think generally whoever was closest to him, but I feel like it was Lorenowitz who kind of consistently would step to make sure Blanco was covered.
Yeah.
And then really you have Obobese marked by the remaining center back, can't really get much to him. You've got Valeri and Blanco kind of cut out. And then I think because Atlanta kept Garza and Escobar so far up the field, their two wingbacks so far up the field, it really limited Portland's ability to get any other sort of wide players forward.
Yeah, Villafañe did not get forward. Like, I can't remember a cross from Villafañe.
I mean, I think he cut inside once or twice, but I mean, I don't remember much good service from Villafañe.
Same for Valentin.
Yeah.
Didn't really get up the right. So they just both looked very concerned with trying to mark the flood of players that were coming at them the whole time. So it's understandable that they couldn't get forward.
But I want to really emphasize, because I don't know, it seemed like the camera was pretty zoomed in. So if like folks at home maybe couldn't get as much of a perspective on it.
People are rightly mad because we could see the Fox
broadcast. It was a little bit nauseating.
It was close-ups of players' faces, and it was very narrow shots of the field. And for me, I couldn't really tell what was going on when I looked at the TV.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so one thing that I think we were both kind of impressed by, or sort of confused and like, is that, wow, okay, was that routinely I would see, like, you had Jose Martinez for this forward, you had Miguel Almirón kind of behind him, and then the players on either side, like on the far touchlines, were Greg Garza and Escobar. That they were playing that far forward that regularly. And again, it really kept that entire Portland back line back, and it kept Diego Chara back in there because he was trying to limit options through the middle. And so it felt like Portland were always trying to counterattack through long balls, but then staying deep and getting really stretched out. Mm-hmm. And that seems like Atlanta's game from start to finish.
I want to say as well that some of the attempted counterattacks, you could kind of see what they were going for. Mm-hmm. I actually can't remember if it was Villafañe or Valentin that was the worst culprit a couple of times. They were trying to hit the channel for Bobasay to hopefully maybe run in behind to some of that space that is left when the fullbacks are high. And basically, the balls weren't good enough. Some of them just fell short, or they hit Remedy screening. Like, he didn't even have to work hard to screen. They just kind of landed at his feet a few times. And I wonder if it's just the pressure that is on them as they try to clear and counter. They didn't even have enough time to deliver quality balls forward.
Yeah.
It's the first half especially, I'm thinking of.
And that, I think, was very key. It's that if you give Jorge Villafañe the ball, and even if he's staying deep, but if you give him 5 seconds to pick his head up and spot a crossfield pass or a ball down the channel, or just wait for somebody to get open for him, he's still going to be able to pick those spots, even if he himself isn't getting forward.
Mm-hmm.
But if you put him under pressure immediately, and they did early and often, you don't have time to pick out your pass, and so either you're going to just try to hoof it long, or the other thing we saw a lot of was kind of driven balls on the floor towards the vague direction of Valeri or Ebobase or Blanco. But then you've got numbers there for Atlanta, and they're able to pick those passes off.
We've got the thing Lorentovic talked about, right? Yeah. Where there is enough free Atlanta defender for someone to step and really mess that up.
Yeah, and I think the key moment for me in terms of like, ooh, Portland are in trouble, is I think within the first 15 minutes, there was Diego Valeri going very wide. And I think the idea was to create some sort of an overload on one of the touchlines. But as soon as you got that sort of, theoretically, that playmaker moving out of position, again, you're kind of isolating Ebobase, and you're not really helping yourself get more of a fluid attack going.
It reminded me a bit of Acosta for DC United against Columbus Crew, where he was just trying to find the game and ended up coming very deep and very wide and couldn't quite get into it. Yeah, but that's a playmaker's job, right? You're so important that you eventually have to find a way to get on the ball. But when you end up coming that deep, then...
Yeah, and I would contrast
something's
that.
Something's gone wrong.
Indeed. And I would contrast that with, there were a couple occasions when Miguel Almirón was, like, Daryl and I are in the same room right now. We're what, maybe 2 feet apart?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't necessarily...
We're a foot closer than usual.
That is true. They weren't quite that close, but there were moments when Almirón was like really within touching distance of Jose Martinez. And I think the idea when they were doing that was that it would be like a quick little flick from Almirón, and then he would run off, and they were trying to find those little combinations through that tight space, that kind of compact defense. And when you keep that playmaker there, you start to get those opportunities. And I don't think Atlanta had that many clear-cut, great shooting opportunities in the first half. They obviously had one, but it still felt like they were not changing what they were doing. They were staying with their game plan of getting the ball to Almirón, having him attack with pace, or looking for the ball into Jose Martinez.
Yeah.
Or
they found
him
early, right? Wasn't it? Yeah. I think it was Escobar squared it. Maybe Gressel or Escobar squared it from the right early on, and Martinez put it just wide.
That's right.
So that was a warning shot really early.
I think that was Escobar, And then the crazy thing to me is I could probably keep going with, like, but then there were times when they would play, they were out of pressure, Atlanta would play their way out of pressure and move the ball around the back three. Mm-hmm. And then they just had such a varied approach in their attack that I think that was the other huge thing for Portland is as soon as you put out one fire, there's three more to go.
Yeah.
And you're kind of always scrambling to deal with what Atlanta are doing. And as we've talked about many times on the show, if you're always reacting, then you're never really putting your own stamp on the game. You're kind of holding on for as long as you can.
Portland did essentially that 4-4-2, right? It was like a tight and narrow and compact 4-4-2. And they would shuffle from one side of the field to the other. But because Atlanta always had that width, they were constantly just being, they were running backwards and forwards. Doing shuttle runs across the midfield.
They basically were definitely doing that. I would say, not to be nitpicky, I would say, in my opinion, it was closer to a 4-4-1-1. And that stood out to me because it did feel like we've seen Portland do the 4-4-2, especially defensively. And I think there were times when they did that and it was Valeri and Abobase kind of rotating who was going to step and who was going to stay a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
But it felt like there was a lot of Diego Valeri dropping in and then Abobase not really having anybody around him for 20 yards.
I think that's part of Portland being outnumbered in central midfield then, that Valeri was essentially helping out the two central guys, Guzman and Chara.
Yeah, that checks out. Yeah. So we should probably get to the goals themselves, but first, should we take a break to talk about today's sponsor?
Yeah, let's talk about what we both independently chose to wear.
Are you wearing them too?
MLS
Cup. I didn't know that. Are we wearing the same ones too? I think we might be.
Actually, it could be one of a number of sponsors, as was pointed out to us that we were we were advertiser adorned for a couple of nights.
There was a period when I think I had four different sponsors on my body at once, yes.
But today's show is sponsored by Liverpool Jeans.
It sure is.
Premium quality at non-premium prices. And I think the best testament I can give is that when, apparently independently, we both wanted to look smart but not too smart, casual but classy, we both went for our Liverpool jeans.
Comfortable is the other one, because they've got the 1% spandex, 99% cotton, so it's got that little stretch. So when we knew we were going to have to be on the move today, getting to the stadium, running through traffic on a couple occasions, and then up and down, moving around, getting the press conference, talking to players, you got to be able to, if you're constricted, you're walking like Kramer with the straight legs, and then you can't get anywhere, and suddenly you're a weird looking person and they don't let you in the locker room.
So Liverpool jeans will stretch just like Atlanta stretch the field with their fullbacks, but they're comfortable just like Atlanta's back three.
You do some copywriting, don't you? That was
sometimes
well done.
I do it live on the show.
So if you're not planning to attend MLS Cup, but maybe you just want some comfortable pants that look very nice, Liverpool Jeans has you covered, and they have you covered at an additional 20%, Mr. Grove.
Yep, 20% off at liverpooljeans.com when you use the discount code TSS. Taylor just did it with his hands.
I did.
TSS for 20%
firework hands
at liverpooljeans.com. They're good to buy for yourself, but also holidays come in, they will make a very nice gift.
Maybe you want to say congratulations to the Atlanta United team. You buy them awesome Liverpool jeans, I'm sure they'll appreciate it and not think it's confusing.
Well, they soaked the clothes they were wearing recently,
they
right?
They certainly did.
Yeah, they certainly did. What we were told was the Heineken spray. Not champagne, Heineken spray.
There were a few bottles of champagne, but it was definitely much more of a beer smell than a champagne smell in there.
Did you know? I don't know if people have seen this or not, but the players were all wearing ski masks. Mm-hmm. After Joseph Martinez turned up to the press conference ski goggles, ski masks.
They weren't robbing a bank.
He's going to rob a bank to fund the Champions League run. ski goggles, to not get beer in their eyes.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
Well, let's talk about the goals that you have to score to win the championship.
Oh, and also thank you to Liverpool Jeans for sponsoring today's episode.
Yes. Link will be in the show notes.
There we are.
See, we got there eventually.
Eventually.
All right. So the Joseph Martinez goal that opened it all up.
I'm just going to say this right now, Daryl, and I don't want to be controversial. I think Joseph Martinez is a pretty good goal scorer.
I do too. There are numbers to back that.
Yeah, but I said it first, so I count.
Good job, buddy. So 39th minute. It did look like something was coming from Atlanta, but there was also the feeling that if something doesn't come by half time and we get into second half, 60th minute, Atlanta could start to panic and maybe Portland eventually figure out a way to get one on the break.
Can I blow up Paul Tenorio's spot real fast?
Yeah.
Because I was talking to him at halftime and he was about to write a tweet because I think that had been a thing that he was thinking about was how the Atlanta crowd was so up for it. The players were so up for it. You saw it from kickoff, Miguel Almirón sprinted 30 yards to put people under pressure.
Yeah.
And to me, it felt like they're so up for it. And I think Paul's point was, but if you kind of continue to not score, the crowd gets antsy, people get kind of concerned, and then maybe Portland find their way back in. And I believe he was in the process of tweeting that when Joseph Martinez scored and he just rapidly hit delete and saved himself some blushes.
So let's talk about that Martinez goal.
Sure.
It starts with essentially Portland trying to clear the ball, right?
So trying to would be the operative trying to clear phrase the there, ball. Yeah.
So Mabiala tries to clear it from his own right corner,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I think he kind of hits Polo lays it back. then Zach Valentin, I think, hits a pretty good ball into the feet of Jeremy Obobese.
Yes.
And the reason I want to give all that backstory is because it's really important to me that Mabiala was all the way back in that right corner.
Yes.
Because he's the one that's playing Joseph Martinez onside when this Michael Parkhurst slide tackle pass comes through to Martinez. I immediately thought, oh, that's coming back for offside, until I saw the replay and saw Mabiala keeping him on.
I'm going to say, if you're going to assign blame for this goal, and maybe this is harsh, I'm going to say it's like 50% Mabiala, 40% Obobese, and maybe 10% Liam Ridgewell sprinkled in there.
Yes.
Because, as you said, it's a ball out. It is into the feet of Obobese. Now, credit to him. He's dropping in. He's trying to, like, facilitate
he's
some sort
of...
He's
coming to be an option, right?
Yeah.
He's like, I'm trying to relieve pressure. My team's in trouble. Come hit my feet.
But I think he's trying to, like, basically sprint back to show for the ball, but also evaluate his options and also recognize that he's got a little bit of pressure. And I think he's doing all that mental math. And so, because of that, he's not 100% focused on that first touch. And he does spill it. It's about 5 yards away from him, at least. And I think then he's trying to react to it.
It's heavy, basically, right?
Yeah.
It's a heavy touch.
But he's then still trying to react to it and sort of but make those same evaluations, and contrast that with Michael Parkhurst, who I think is just trying to make as dramatic of a play on the ball as he can. And that's exactly what he does.
Did you hear in the press conference what they talked about? That they knew that when Obobese comes deep and receives the ball back to goal, he likes to go to his right. So apparently the
Parkhurst
slide tackle was not designed as a slide tackle pass. It was designed because he knows which way Obobese is going. So he was just trying to get a block on it, right?
Yeah.
Essentially to start a counter press type thing.
Wow.
But what ends up happening...
That's a certain level of preparation that I'm kind of frightened by.
Well, that's how you win MLS Cup.
That's
right?
True.
But so instead of just getting a tackle in, the ball pops loose, it goes straight through to Joseph Martinez with Liam Ridgewell on the way.
That's the 10%. Yeah, so Liam Ridgewell kind of gets a touch to it, and I genuinely don't know.
He plays it into Martinez, which would, I guess, make Martinez onside anyway, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about
that.
He's
made a defensive play.
And the reason why that's important, we'll get to in a moment, but I just want to say, like, I genuinely can't tell, because Ridgewell does get a foot to it, and I can't tell if he reacts late and is a little bit flat-footed, and so he's just trying to make a lunge on the ball, or if he's aware that there's a chance I don't get this, and there's a chance that I clear out Joseph Martinez, and then that could be even worse for us, because that could be a card and a penalty, or even, like, you know, and we don't even know what color the card could have been.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe he's just trying to hold up a little bit, but then as a result, he's not going 100% into a challenge.
Wasn't he a little bit off balance as well?
I think he was
starting to shift left, just, I think, to get his shape back and to make sure everything's covered. So then he has to come back the other way, and then he's off balance as he tries to just throw a leg at this ball, and he doesn't quite get there.
He does not.
Well, he does get there, but not enough.
Yeah, Joseph Martinez gets there more.
Yes, he does.
And then takes a really, really great little touch, pulls goalkeeper out, then gets around him, slots it in.
Finish. Does he fake Antonella? I feel like there's a little, just a bit of a
fake
that
does.
Suggests I'm going to pull the trigger and shoot it, and it sends Antonella down, and that's when Martinez then accelerates wider, and essentially then can just go take a wide arc around him, and then he's got just about got the angle, in the British sense, which means he does have the angle.
I gotcha. I see what you're putting down. I would say it reminds me almost of, like, what, this is a weird way to explain it, but it reminds me of the way Atlanta take their free kicks, where they kind of have that run up and stop, and there's that feint to see if they can push the back line back.
But we'll talk about that with the second goal.
We will, but there's that initial run that's designed to push the defense back, and then cross the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing, like, this is basically what Jose Martinez was doing, was there's that little feint as though he's going to shoot that brings Antonella out, and then he kind of dives into it.
Yeah.
But now he's overcommitted. Martinez then takes a touch around him, nice and calm, puts it away. There was a little bit of protest because I think Portland, we thought maybe they were saying there was a handball. I thought they were calling for handball because of the way they were gesturing. But I think what they were doing is saying he was offside. That's why they were raising their hand.
All right.
We went back and
maybe calling for a foul to be called on Michael
Parkhurst
for the slide tackle. I pulled up Fox Soccer Match Pass and went back and did my own replays. I think it was clean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if nothing else, it's not clear enough that it should have been given. I think it's like maybe you could call that, but also you could probably let it go. And that's what happened. But the biggest factor here is that Mabiala hasn't really stepped out much and is the one who's keeping Joseph Martinez onside by about a foot or two.
I wish I could find a good reason, but essentially, if you're in a well-drilled defense, you should get back level with the rest of your team when you're the center-back. Right?
Yeah.
He should be level with Ridgewell, level with Valentin, level with Villafania to just form that back four as quickly as possible.
Agree 100%. I would say that one thing that I saw was, and maybe this explains it, because I don't think it was just that he switched off and just didn't think, like, oh, I need to get out of the box. I think it's that throughout the first half, there was a lot of Liam Ridgewell telling Jorge Villafania to go somewhere and then telling Mabiala to go to somewhere. And it was a lot of Liam Ridgewell telling Mabiala, oh, you've got to stay with Jose Martinez. Okay, no, now you've got to step. And I think there was a lot of instruction from Liam Ridgewell, which indicates to me that they were, again, kind of scrambling and trying to figure out the best way to defend. But if you're Mabiala and you're constantly being told, oh, no, move here. Okay, no, shift there. I think, like, maybe you just switch off a little bit because you're not quite as comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so. Maybe there was just a couple second delay when maybe there wouldn't have been otherwise. But that's all it takes.
Oh, okay. So that That was 1-0 at halftime.
Yep.
I think we came out second half. Timber scored reasonably soon. We have the minute here. 54th minute. So 9 minutes into the second half, Escobar scores after the Martinez flick on from the free kick. Who takes the free kick in the end?
I believe it's Almiron.
So it's Gressel fakes the run up. Almiron takes
Almiron gets the MLS assist for it.
Yes, there we go. Literally, this case. Before we break down this goal, in the press conference, you weren't in this one because you were getting sprayed with a certain brand of beverage. Savarese, the Portland coach, was upset with the referees. Mm-hmm. I think I might be paraphrasing. I think it was something like, for this game, you need a certain level of referee. Mm-hmm. He essentially thought that this free kick that they take should not have been a free kick. I don't know if you can remember this play.
Yeah, it's Mabiala comes through and kind of kicks it, but also takes out. I forget who he took
it's
out.
It's Joseph Martinez.
There you go.
It's Joseph Martinez. Garza has like lifted it over another defender, and Martinez is trying to get there. And when I rewatched it, Mabiala essentially, he gets a leg almost around Martinez, but then his other leg is coming around him as well. So he's essentially like almost scissoring him, you know what I'm saying? And like, crush him.
I always go back to like one of my favorite officials that we had in like our adult indoor league. I remember I got like kind of a similar play happened on me.
Happened to you?
Yeah, it happened to me. And the player turned around and just started screaming at him like, I got all ball. Are you kidding me? Look, I got the ball away. And the official responded like, yeah, and you went through him to get it. You can't just do that. And I think that is one of the things where if you're the aggrieved party, if you're the Timbers, you probably think, oh, he got ball. Jose Martinez made the most of it. But, you know, it's a physical game. Contact's going to happen. And I think if you're an Atlanta fan and honestly, I'll speak as a neutral here and say to me, it's, yeah, you get the ball. But if you're kind of going in the air, you get the ball, but you also run into Jose Martinez, I would say in multiple different ways, to me, it's always going to be a free kick.
Yeah, and at the very least, it's not like, it's not obviously not a free kick, right?
No.
You could say it's a marginal call and maybe a ref who was letting more things go might have thought, oh yeah, he got his leg around him and he got there, he might have hit him in the back, but he got to the ball first. I could see how it wouldn't be given, but it's not so obvious that you can say, this is what the whole game turned on, right?
Yeah, and I think maybe,
and even then you've got to defend the free kick afterwards. Like, you had the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I think true, very true. I think maybe part of it also was that I think as the game went on, we saw Savarese get more and more frustrated.
Yeah.
And frankly, I thought that was pretty poor management, in my opinion. That there was a good, I tweeted this, there was a good like 10-minute period where he was mostly just screaming at the fourth official.
Yeah.
And like, I get if you're frustrated, but that's 10 minutes in MLS Cup that you're not focused on changing things and adjusting your tactics. You're 10 minutes focused on being the aggrieved party and yelling a bunch.
Yeah.
And the thing that made that even more surprising to me, again, speaking as a neutral, maybe Timbers fans will disagree, is I felt like he kind of went out of his way to call some stuff for the Timbers in the first half. And
oh, really?
I mean, the Atlanta crowd was booing pretty consistently in that first half for the decisions, because I think they thought Almiron should have gotten a free kick that was not given on like the near touchline to where we're sitting right now.
Yeah.
There were a few more like that. And I thought the officials, in my opinion, did a good enough game.
Were they saying Boo or Boo Rad Gazan?
It was that. That was definitely about Boo Rad Gazan. I would say they were also cheering again at the end of this free kick, so we should probably get back to that.
Yeah, so Almiron, so it's the fake run-up from Gressel. Then Almiron serves it in left-footed. Joseph Martinez gets up. I can't remember who challenges him, but flicks it on to the back post where Escobar has come sprinting in at the far post and scores. I think you've got to be looking at Villafania here.
Oh, 100%.
Or we should say Villafania should have been looking at Escobar.
Yes, 100%.
That's another way of phrasing it.
And it's especially damning because if you watch it, when that sort of feint from Gressel happens, Villafania drops the deepest. He drops probably 5 yards and is very clearly the last man. And I think,
is he also playing Escobar onside?
Yes.
So well, I think these goals have a sort of a bad offside line element to them.
I think he may not have been the only one when the flick actually happens. Mm-hmm. He definitely would have been playing a lot of people onside. But it's more so that he drops faster than anybody, he being Villafania.
Are you saying he dropped when the Gressel run-up happened?
And then he stops. And I think that was part of the problem, is that he realizes, like, oh no, I've dropped too deep. I'm going to stop and hold now and wait for everybody else to drop with me. But because he's now run back, stopped, and then is going to try to start again, he sort of isn't then tracking Escobar. He's not kind of at full speed and not really aware of his surroundings. I think he's panicking a little bit, as exemplified by the fact that he then runs and stops again.
Yeah.
So he like drops, stops, waits, drops and stops again, and really never, I think, is even aware that Escobar is kind of ghosting him in the back post.
I think I see him check back towards his own goal, like look back towards his own goal, but Escobar's running the other side of him.
Yep.
So he just completely, I think he completely misses this run until it's way too late.
Yeah. And I mean, it might look like an easy finish, and maybe it was, but from my vantage point, that's a flicked on ball in traffic that Escobar is able to get to. I think it's a sliding finish that he puts in like the far corner from where he is. Mm-hmm. But I think it's great presence of mind to track that ball and adjust to the flick. Mm-hmm. And then I enjoy the celebration. Kissing the wedding ring, pointing to the wife. I'm a big fan of that one.
So Portland did have a couple of chances and half chances later on. Did they change anything? Like, I thought I saw Blanco underneath Valeri and Milano after he came on for Bobasay. Was it all that different?
I really don't think
direct,
so.
Maybe?
Yeah, it was a little bit more direct. I think they brought on more attackers. They tried to get, I think, more possession wide, or at least trying to get attackers wide so they could maybe pull Atlanta laterally.
Yeah.
But it didn't really work. And I think, again, I think part of that was maybe Savarese was feeling aggrieved, and so he was yelling.
He's yelling.
That might be like the fifth time I've said aggrieved in this podcast. I got to find new words.
It's Taylor's word of the day.
Yeah, it's usually theoretical, but today it's aggrieved. I really was trying to figure out, like, okay, what are they going to do in the second half? What are Portland doing differently? And then tried a few things here and there, but it just felt like they were always kind of playing catch up. Mm-hmm. And after that second goal went in, it really never felt like Portland were going to pull one back. I think their closest chance was the Bobasay header in the first half. Brad Guzan did very well to save it.
He really did.
Although he then, I think, jokingly chastised himself in the press conference for not catching the ball. He's like, I got to catch that ball. But yeah, I think overall, a solid performance from him and really limited all of Portland's chances. You've got the full-time stats, right? I'd be curious to hear.
I haven't really looked at them.
I would wonder how many shots that were on target. And then even however many Portland did end up having, I really would say that they're only legitimately decent chance was the header for Bobasay, and then maybe when Alves Powell comes on, he gets an opportunity at the back post very late in the game, and I think either mishits it or kind of just whiffs it and puts it wide for a goal kick.
Our friends are up to tell us. Mm-hmm. First half, one shot on target. Second half, two shots on target. Total, three shots on target.
Not many.
For 95 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it's Atlanta's day.
It is.
Right? I'd actually be surprised if too many Portland fans wanted to listen through this because, you know, it's obviously heartbreaking to lose MLS Cup. Which Atlanta players haven't we talked about that impressed you today?
Michael Parkhurst.
Yes.
Michael Parkhurst and Greg Garza. They played so well that it made me frustrated about what the U.S. national team has done with their player selections.
Yeah.
Because those two were immense. Michael Parkhurst anchoring that back line, directing traffic, stepping, making plays, obviously with the Bobasay. But Greg Garza was the one who was, like, again, he was, every time I was like, who is that attacking player who's crossed? Oh, it's Greg Garza. Who's that player who's now sliding in to block a shot? Oh, it's Greg Garza. He was all over the place. I thought both of them were exceptional on the evening.
Greg Garza, the knock has always been that, like, defensively, he's not that great. Going forward, he's really exciting and productive. Yeah. We didn't actually get to see him do any defending today. So
We saw a few moments.
Perfect game for Greg Garza, right? It's the Greg Garza showcase down the left.
Yes. Yeah. So since you're a defender, we can talk about a player who did do quite a bit of defending, and that would be Remedy. And I thought Eric Remedy had an exceptional game as well. He was my other, I think you, not to, you know, blow up your spot, but I believe with the MVP voting, I went Martinez, you know, because I like goals. Uh-huh. You went Michael Parkhurst.
I did go Michael Parkhurst. But I think he was underappreciated in this game. I think he kept that back three super organized. And I also think that slide tackle to set up the first goal is kind of the thing that broke the game open.
Yeah. But I bet if we were to rewatch this game from start to finish, we would be even more impressed by Remedy than we already are. Mm-hmm. Because I think he did an excellent job of just, like, hassling Valeri without, I don't believe, ever picking up a card. And he really did shut it down. He fronted Valeri a lot, so there weren't that many opportunities into his feet.
Yeah.
But then he really was all around. And the other thing I saw was him dropping into, say Portland did try to press Garza, you would see Remedy kind of drop in really fast and be another passing outlet. And there were multiple occasions when Portland would try to press.
Yeah.
And then Atlanta would kind of play through Remedy. He would turn and play to the other side. And you've completely bypassed all that work from Portland.
A quick mention as well for Gonzalez Pires. He had some what I think of as those really just determined athletic defensive plays. There's one right towards the end where Alves Powell's just waiting for a long ball to come to him, and he thinks he's just going to bring this down, right? Mm-hmm. And I think Perez, I want to say, sprints 20 yards and just dives in front of him and gets there first. And that really sort of, to me, summed up like the last 10 minutes of this game or so. The dominance, basically. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, I think you could pick any number of Atlanta players to be your, like, potential MVP.
Yeah.
I still think it's probably, it rightfully goes to Jose Martinez. A goal and an assist.
Yeah, I'm not going to argue with
that. And I would say a very important goal, because if you don't get that goal and you go in halftime 0-0, maybe you panic, maybe you start changing what was working because it didn't seem like it was working. instead, when you have a 1-0 lead, you can kind of protect that lead and do what you want to keep doing.
My favorite thing from Martinez was in the press conference. One of his answers to a question that wasn't about this was eventually like, I'm waiting for you to stop asking questions so I can go celebrate with my team.
I think
he said it with a nice smile so everybody liked it, but he was essentially like, hey guys, let's shut this down. Let me go celebrate.
He wanted a beverage. That was clear.
He wanted a beverage. A guy we haven't talked about on this podcast, but you and I talked about while we were watching, Darlington Nagbe had a very Darlington Nagbe at Atlanta game, which is, there's no big moment. There's what, like one shot over the bar or whatever. There's no big creative moment, but he just kept the ball moving with quick, short passes. Yeah. He really facilitated that sort of, the ball quickly moving around midfield.
I would absolutely agree. I think we didn't see, I know you had maybe toyed with the idea of him being the, in Berhalter system, like that Higuain number 10.
Yeah.
I don't think we saw much.
No, I think I was just stretching for number 10s,
that could be.
Right?
That could
if he's going to be in at the Berhalter system, he's going to have to be doing something similar to what he does for Atlanta. Wasn't Matt Dolan here saying the one thing is that Nagbe isn't great at like big diagonal cross-field balls, and that probably won't work for the way that Columbus liked to... that Berhalter likes to spread it wide, but Atlanta managed to spread it wide. I guess it happens more along the floor when Nagbe is there. We haven't talked much about Almiron, oddly, which is weird, right? But he still looked the most dangerous player, and he was the one that made Portland defenders just backtrack and panic.
I mean, and he's the one who I said earlier, like, he kind of stayed central and was near Martinez, but it did feel like as soon as like Portland would adjust a little bit, maybe Diego Char would sit deeper, suddenly Almiron was out on the touchline.
And it
just felt like he knew when to adjust his approach and his kind of positioning to again then force Portland to adjust and change and move somebody over, and then he would move to the other side. And I think his mobility and fluidity was incredibly important to Atlanta. And then just the fact that it was Chara, that Almiron gets the ball and kind of is neck and neck with Chara and ends up outrunning him and I believe draws a foul. But the idea that Almiron was faster with the ball than Chara without was telling, put it that way.
It certainly was. Anything else to add here at MLS Cup?
Yeah, I would guess
we've gone beyond quick take, hot take here, right? I think this is our review show.
That's fine. we'll have Felipe Cardenas on this week to talk about Atlanta.
Yeah.
So we can do more of a season
review. Right? So
we
can take a step back and figure that out.
But until then, I will say, and I doubt they're still listening, as you said, why would Portland fans want to listen to a whole review about their team losing? But I think, first of all, Portland, I mean, they did what they could, as harsh as that might be, but like it kind of always felt to me like Atlanta were the favorites and it was always going to be an uphill task for Portland. But I think the Portland fans were incredibly impressive.
Yes.
Because they were right above us and we could hear them throughout, again with the glass and everything like that. We could still hear them. And it's
I think it's through the vents, right? Isn't there like some vents in the top of the press room that must at least have a little gap going up to the stand above us? And we could hear them still chanting and going. I was really impressed. I would have given up at a certain point. They went all the way through.
They did. And I think it was impressive to me that we could hear them, because one of the stories that was doing the rounds right before, like an hour before kickoff or so, is that they, even though they had brought all of their drums with them, the drums were not allowed. I think they were only allowed to bring in one small drum into the stadium. I don't know if that was an Atlanta United or if that was an MLS decision, because I kind of don't fully understand who's in charge of match day when it comes
to
MLS Cup.
More drums is better, surely.
You would assume that, but maybe there was a concern that they would be too loud. I don't really know. But I think must have been frustrating for Portland fans to have brought those drums all the way here. But it still is a credit to Portland
you have
fans.
You have to pay extra to fly those things, right?
You do.
Delta don't say, you get 7 drums free.
I doubt it. I doubt they do that. Yeah, so just to travel all the way here, to be as vocal as they were.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like the thing that stood out to me is we went to lunch today with some folks, and there were Portland fans sitting next to Atlanta fans. I think, wasn't there like the most polite trash talking ever in the hotel lobby of like, well, I think we will win. Well, I think we will win. Well, we'll see what happens this evening, won't we? Yes, we will. Best of luck to you. And it was just this very like, wait, are we British all of a sudden?
It wasn't even like a weird subtext, right?
It was just that friendly.
Yeah.
It was a very friendly, if not formal, back and forth. But yeah, I think it ended up just being about supporting the teams that were on the field, and that's what it should be. We don't need violence. We don't need drunken nonsense. It was just it was a great atmosphere. Yeah. So well done, Portland fans. Well done, Atlanta fans.
And maybe final closing thoughts just on the event as a whole. Like, we had some friends back home or family for you who are like kind of soccer fans but not MLS fans, tuned into MLS Cup, and from what I understand, we're impressed with what they saw because of the spectacle that is Mercedes-Benz Stadium with 70,000+ people here.
My brother-in-law was not impressed by Portland's passing that led to Atlanta's first goal. So I think that was one thing that stood out to him.
He was a dribbling fan, right?
This is true. But he was very impressed by the crowd. I think he was kind of like, I don't... He's similar to, I think, a lot of people here, a lot of people in the press box as well, was just sort of like, that's a crowd for a soccer game? And we had heard that. We had heard that when we were here for All-Star, that the crowd for soccer is louder and more consistent than the crowd for football. But, and again, I don't know why it surprises me, but it was still just to hear that volume and to hear in the 70-something minute the entire crowd singing We Ready, it was a good thing. It was an enjoyable time.
All right, should we wrap it up here?
But they're still not as good as DC United.
Taylor Rockwell, thank you for taking the time to bus it down to Atlanta with me this weekend.
Flying back, baby. Flying back. And hopefully we make it back. We apparently have
the snow coming.
Between 2 inches and 400 inches due in Richmond, depending on who you talk to.
Ooh. All right, listeners, thank you for listening. And we will talk to you again soon, later this week.
There we are.